Michael, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
So firstly, looking at this report, could you let us know what exactly first prompted this report by the Australian Human Rights Commission?
Look, I'm not sure, but I certainly know that a series of incidents of sexual assault and harassment on Australian campuses prompted some attention by the Human Rights Commission, by Universities Australia, and by other bodies. And some of those involved assaults by students against other students within college residences, halls of residence. Others didn't. But I think there's been an awareness for some time that sexual assault and harassment are likely to be problems on university campuses as they are elsewhere in Australia.
And these numbers, I think, would be pretty stunning to anybody who really hasn't been tuned into the kind of complaints we've seen about sexual harassment, sexual assault on campus. Were you surprised at all?
No, look, I wasn't, unfortunately, and I suppose that's because I'm aware that, for example, young women have higher levels of victimisation. They're more often the victims of sexual assault and harassment than are other women, and we already knew from international research that some of the risk factors for violence, some of the things that make sexual violence and sexual harassment more likely, are very visible on university campuses. So, for example, where groups of young men have sexist beliefs about women, where there's high levels of drug and alcohol consumption, where there's gender segregation, and so on. So, you know, I suppose I already knew that some of the things that feed into a greater risk of sexual assault and harassment, you know, already are present in university context.
Is this one fairly timely, or has it been a long time coming?
Look, I think it's timely. I mean, certainly if we look around the world, in North America, in the US and Canada, for example, there's been attention to problems of sexual assault and harassment on university campuses now for a couple of decades. And Australia, in a sense, looks far, far behind that. But if we look at the UK, in contrast, they're in a similar place to us, where there's only now starting to be systematic attention to the problems of sexual assault and harassment among staff and students, and kind of questions around, you know, what universities should do in response.
Well, I suppose that would be my next question, Michael. What should universities be doing in response to this report?
Sure. Look, where universities often are starting is with how they can respond appropriately and responsibly to victims and survivors. And certainly that's the first thing you need to do. Universities around the country, I think, are scrambling to make sure that they have decent systems and policies in place for responding appropriately to victims and survivors, and also for holding perpetrators accountable. But then the bigger question is, well, what will universities do to prevent that violence and assault from happening in the first place? And I've argued in a piece in yesterday's Conversation and in other materials that, in fact, there's a whole lot that universities can do that, from the evidence, will reduce, will prevent sexual assault and harassment. And one key thing universities can do is educate their students. Now, it's tempting for universities to do that simply through a 10-minute lecture to all their first-year classes, or a simple poster campaign. All the international evidence says that that won't work. What you need instead is a much more comprehensive prevention approach that does involve face-to-face education for students, but it's not one-off, it's multi-session, it gets students talking and discussing sex and relationships and so on, and it's complemented by other strategies, strategies of senior leadership, strategies of communication on campus about policies and responsible behaviour and so on.
You know, it's undeniable to me that this is kind of education that is obviously needed. These kind of programs do desperately need to be implemented. But I have seen a reaction amongst some university students. Some people kind of get their back up a little bit when they're approached from an educational perspective, teaching men not to sexually assault women, teaching anybody not to sexually assault or harass anybody. People put their back up. They get the hashtag not all men out and the like. So what do you feel is the best way of implementing this, not to not to put our blame on anybody, but to really see some decent results?
Yeah, sure. Look, and there is a fair amount of defensiveness, I think, particularly among men around these issues, and I think some men feel like they're being unfairly tarred as rapists and bashers, and it's all a bit anti-male. Now, I don't think that's true, but I understand why that defensiveness can take place. And so I think one of the key things we can do in response is to emphasise the positive role that men and indeed women can play, and emphasise, I suppose, the payoff in doing that, the payoff in terms of knowing that you're not pressuring the person you're with into sex, the payoff in terms of healthier and more enjoyable relationships and sexual lives and so on. But part of that is, you know, being blunt about the fact that it's absolutely critical to seek consent for sexual involvement, and it's, you know, it's no longer okay. It's no longer anywhere near as okay as it used to be to assume that, you know, just because that girl is not pushing me off, that it's okay to continue, you know, being sexual with her, or because, you know, we've had sex before, that it's okay to have sex again, and so on. I mean, I think part of the work that universities are facing is changing culture and changing our assumptions and beliefs about sex, about consent, and so on, so that it's much more likely that people will take seriously the wishes and desires of the people they're with.
And just finally, Michael, how do you feel we might best approach this one so it is a collective effort amongst universities to be changing their culture, to all be approaching it in a fairly consistent way rather than, I suppose each university kind of going their own way, trying to figure out what's best for them in terms of sexual assault?
Sure. Look, I think the best strategy there is to identify really clearly what effective practice looks like. In other words, to spell out, you know, here's what a kind of credible and robust response to these issues of sexual assault and harassment looks like. And Universities of Australia, for example, have released today a 10-point plan about what universities can do and should do. And part of that is saying we need best practice violence prevention education. And in the materials I and others have written, we say, here's what that looks like. And I think that will put the pressure on universities across Australia to respond in more accountable and consistent ways, rather than adopting what I think some universities have been tempted to adopt, which is much more tokenistic and superficial measures.
Michael, thank you very much. Really do appreciate you joining us, giving us a bit of insight in this one.
My pleasure. Let's see what happens in the university sector.